Earners, what's up? Look, in the world of personal finance management, finding the right tool is crucial. If you've been relying on Mint to keep your personal finances in check, I got a mix of news for you. Mint is closing down. But here's a silver lining. Monarch Money is stepping up as the go-to financial app, and users, including myself, are making the switch with a smile. Before Monarch, juggling my finances felt like navigating a stormy sea. Other apps either lacked features or were too cumbersome. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design turned financial management from a chore into a breeze. The constant updates, well, that's the cherry on top. But what truly set it apart for me was its collaboration feature. Money matters can strain relationships, but Monarch brings peace to the table. The app's collaboration tools allow my partner and I to seamlessly manage our finances together. We aligned on our budgets, tracked our cash flow, and even planned our future goals all in one place. Speaking of goals, be it saving for a down payment, your dream vacation, or your children's education, Monarch simplifies it all. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal hailed it as the best budgeting app. This isn't just an app. It's the next generation of personal finance management, ad-free, intuitive, and always evolving with you in mind. Now look, Monarch isn't just another app. It's the all-in-one solution, from effortlessly importing your data from Mint to customizing your dashboard to your heart's content. Monarch respects your privacy with a strict no ads, no data selling policy. This is financial management as it should be, focused on you. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Mondays. That's monarchmoney.com/Mondays for your extended 30-day free trial.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
A gap that I haven't heard much about of, and I would love for you to educate us on, and that's the widow gap. Because I don't think that's something that's, I mean, I've never heard anybody talk about it. I know it's personal to you, Ebony. Can you elaborate on the widow gap? And I guess as she's doing that, Luis, I guess, could you touch on the housing crisis gap? Because these are two intricate things that I know both affect you both in a different way.
Sure. So the black-white widow gap, let me start by saying that Black people are 16% more likely to be widows than white people. And that's widows and widowers. So I'm talking about men and also women. And that comes from census data that tells us when we look at the percentages, you know, that if you're white, it's 8.9%. And if you're Black, it's 10.4% that you're categorized, self-identified as a widow. One woman that we did interview for our book, she lost her husband in 2021, and she really economically struggled after his death. And so I want to touch upon this because people are impacted differently depending on their marital status. And so, and this is also something I want to point out that doesn't just impact older people. You know, I used to think of widows as it's like something that's just for older people, but there are younger people that are also impacted. And this is particularly unique for Black Americans because we tend to have a lower marriage rate, whether that is that we have a longtime partner that we haven't married, or we intend to get married and haven't gotten married yet. And if that person passes away before we are married, then there are additional financial impacts that the person may experience. And so a couple of things that I wrote down, if I look down, it's only because I don't want to miss anything, because I think this is really important and I really want your audience, you know, to know. One of the things that they can do if they are not married is to have a will and a trust. And this is so very important, because otherwise your parents, your siblings would be your heirs. And while it may not be your intention to leave your partner without any resources, that could be the impact. If you don't have money for a lawyer, I've encouraged, my friends, to look at legal services. And one of those could be a legal plan at your job. That is a service that I had signed up for and had used, and it had benefited, my late fiance and I. Understand your tax situation. People who leave money behind to their spouses, they pay a lower tax rate. And if you're not married and someone leaves you behind their retirement account, it is taxed in a different way, and you're considered a non-spousal inheritant. And I will just tell you, that was also a very difficult conversation for me to realize and to have with my financial advisor. I encourage people to consider life insurance. I am not, a financial advisor, but I want people to know that you can get life insurance to benefit a partner or a loved one, even if you're not married to that person. And if you buy property together, it's really important that you take possession of that property in a way that will pass to the other owner, your partner, if that's what you intend. So I hope that those tips are helpful. And Troy, you're right. I did lose my partner in 2021. And some of these things on this list, many of these things we did because I had used the legal plan at my job. And I was able to be protected in some ways that other widows who are not married may not be.
Question for you. Going back to your example of 2022 in crypto, there's a feeling in our community, as soon as we get into crypto or stocks or investing, that the market tends to collapse. In this data, have you found that rich people are at the end of the spectrum trying to keep this gap wider? Or is that something that is a little bit more conspiratorial?
Well, the biggest reason that this gap is staying as big as it is, and I would love to just give you a few figures through history so people can understand where we've been and where we are. It'll just take 1 second. Right after the Civil War, Black Americans had 1.8 cents on the dollar compared to white families. And then that went up to 6.7 cents, around the 1900. It went up to 9.6 cents on the dollar in the mid-1900s. It actually went up to 22 cents on the dollar in the early 1990s. And now it's at 15 cents on the dollar. So just to let people know, 15 cents on the dollar, it hasn't moved around so much when you look at it overall since about 1980. The gap has been kind of staying in place. And the biggest reason for that is because of what has happened in the stock market, which you all alluded to earlier. Increases in stock market wealth have benefited white Americans more than Black Americans, because more white Americans own stock than Black Americans. And the stock market has gone up a lot. And as you know, stock and ownership of things, capital is taxed differently from income. So there is preferential tax treatment from the US government for people making money off of owning things like stock. And so that's one of the biggest reasons it's staying in place, because Black Americans have acquired more homes. There still is a home ownership gap, but they have acquired more homes than they used to have. But the stock ownership and the ownership of assets is really what holds the gap in place today.
So your classes that you teach at Yale, what exactly is the class that you teach? And what's the data points that you teach in regards to the book in your actual class that you're teaching young people?
Well, it's an MBA class. And you all probably know at business schools, one of the main things they do in a lot of classes is case studies. It's kind of classic from the Harvard case study, and every school has them. Yale, where we teach, has great case studies. And so our class covers the data of actually many different racial wealth gaps. We also cover the Latino white gap as well as the Black gap with white Americans. We look at Asian Americans who actually, a typical Asian household has more wealth than white Americans at this point. So that's a nuanced different picture. And then what we do is we go through history, talk about moments that affected these gaps the most, but every week the class does case studies about what companies or industries could do differently to affect the gap differently. So for example, one industry that we look at is the auto insurance industry. And the auto insurance industry actually prices the car insurance in part based on the zip code where you live. So it's not priced based on the race of the owner, but you know that people tend, in, within zip codes, there tend to be sometimes more of one race than another. And if a zip code has higher crime, auto insurance companies generally charge higher prices on the auto insurance there. So basically, a higher crime area where people would have less money and they're struggling to even rent that car or buy that car, now they've got to pay more on their auto insurance than people in a wealthier area where there's less crime. So in that case study, the class talks about, is that fair and equitable? And if you wanted to change that, how would you change it? How could companies price it differently? Is there a role for government to defray the cost? What are the, you know, what are the reasons that it's priced that way, and how might you change it? So that's an example of a case study we do.
This is a feels like a passion project, right? Ebony, you worked for the Detroit News, and Luis, I know you spent some time as a journalist covering Goldman Sachs. So I wonder, in the case study that you guys are doing, right, these seven families, what are some of the common themes that you're noticing amongst these families, right? What are some of the similarities? What are some of the traumas? What are some of the things that you're seeing that are consistent throughout the families that you've studied, and I guess overall in our communities?
Yeah. So the Black-White wealth gap, we see through the lives of these seven families that it intersects with so many things in society. You know, these families, these individuals, they were dealing with the student loan crisis. Some of them were dealing with the criminal justice system. Some of them on the civil side were dealing with bankruptcy, you know, issues. They were dealing with unemployment, entrepreneurship. So all of the things that are happening in our society, access to capital. You know, I have a friend who says to me from time to time that wealth in Black families sometimes goes like this, if you can see my hand, because you're often trying to help other relatives where things are not necessarily passed always vertically, if that makes sense.
I think the million-dollar question that everyone wants to know tonight in the audience is, do you think, because we often hear the stat that by 2053, the collective wealth of African-Americans will be at zero. Do you think we'll be able to ever bridge the gap, or is it too little too late?
It depends how you calculate it. We've done all these different calculations looking at the trends in the government data around the Black-White wealth gap. And if it continues on pace with how it changed the last 3 years, what will happen? If it continues on pace from the past 20 years, and at these paces, we're talking like 100 years before the gap would be closed, before a typical white family would have the same amount of money as a typical Black family. So it's a long time off unless there are leaps and bounds and changes. And, you know, I know a lot of what you all talk on here is people changing the way they invest, changing the way they think about their money. And, you know, if enough of that happens, that could have an impact. Because again, as I said earlier, one of the single biggest factors in the gap is that white Americans have been investing their money differently than Black Americans. And so a change in that would have an impact. But if there are no changes in the way people invest, no changes in home ownership, no changes in the other big things, it's on this pace, it's about 100 years.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express.
4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.